Hello.
Fritz, Lonnie here.
Hey, Lonnie, thank you for being so prompt.
How are you doing, Fritz?
I'm really good. Yeah, it's taken us a long time to get this together, and I appreciate your perseverance.
It's just great to hear your voice and to talk with you, Fritz.
Well, good. Thank you very much.
Well, let me mention the context of the call. The context is that I have a website, nourishingdestiny.com.
Uh-huh.
We have about 2,500 acupuncturists from all over the world there.
Oh, really?
And I've been running it for 12 years in various incarnations.
Uh-huh.
And the last few years, what I've been doing is just spending time and interviewing individuals who I just think are leading edge thinkers in the field or in any field related, actually, to healing. We've done everything from courses on the implications of the work of the pragmatists and the transcendentalists as they affected culture, all the way through herbalism and how to run a practice, gluten intolerance, and the place of spirituality and the practice of medicine, integral medicine. And I just really couldn't think of a more experienced or a better person to interview. I definitely wanted you included on the site.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've been very involved with acupuncture for years, as well as body work.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful combination.
I thought I'd introduce you, so I'm speaking to Dr. Fritz Smith, who is a physician, osteopath, cranial osteopath, acupuncturist, and the founder of Zero Balancing. Fritz is the author of the book Inner Bridges, A Guide to Energy, Movement, and Body Structure, as well as The Alchemy of Touch. And how old are you now, Fritz?
I just turned 83.
Okay, and you've been practicing clinically some form of medicine for how many years?
Well, I was actively practicing up until 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stopped my general practice and acupuncture, my formal acupuncture practice,
mm-hmm.
I practiced about 10 more years informally
mm-hmm.
in Santa Cruz out of my home.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the last 10 years down here in the desert, I've had a very minimal practice, and most of it is teaching.
Right, but you've been involved in healing either through practicing, teaching, or writing for what, 60 years?
Oh, yeah, I graduated in 1955,
mm-hmm.
so it's been a long time.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I wanted to ask you some questions, really, just some questions about zero balancing in general. And then out of that, maybe a conversation will come about bigger pictures just relative to healing in general, because in terms of age and wisdom and experience, you're definitely at the top of the hierarchy, so I think everybody will value your view
right
here. So my own experience with ZB, which is that I trained very heavily in the martial arts for many years.
Uh-huh.
And I sustained injuries on occasion, one particularly to my knee that body work, acupuncture, herbs, nothing was touching, and I was completely astounded to have one ZB session where the practitioner did what appeared to me to be not much, and to get off the table and have it completely resolved, never to return again.
Wow.
So that practitioner was Roy Capilera, who I know you know very well.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And this was many years ago, so I was always very impressed with that, and of course you came to teach my class at TAI for probably an extended weekend back in the 80s, and I was impressed with meeting you then. So I was just wondering if you could sum up zero balancing, talk a little about the inspiration that led you to it. I've talked to some of your students, and they say the word is that you had some kind of spiritual experience or revelation that had where zero balancing had appeared to you, or some fundamental insight had appeared to you regarding the relationship between the energy body, bones, and body structure. And I just wondered if you could elaborate on whatever that insight was and the founding of zero balancing, and say a little about, you know, what it was at the beginning and where you feel your leading edge is in relationship to all that.
Well, just some general comments, mm-hmm. Lonnie. I was trained, as you know, as an osteopath, and then as an MD, and as a Rolfer. And then I got into acupuncture, which added the dimension of energy into the equation, which the other practices had not really addressed. And when I'm studying acupuncture in England with Worsley, we had to do a project of excellence for one of the master's degree or something. And so I elected to teach acupuncturists how to evaluate the structural body, which I knew from osteopathy in my own experience. And in acupuncture training, you don't get much training in physical evaluation. A lot with pulses, a lot with energy, and a lot with that level, but not much, at least in our school, about how to work with the physical body. So I took it on to teach acupuncturists in England how to read the physical body. And as I did that, then they came up with the question, well, how do we balance the physical body? And this was the beginning of ZB in its basic form. And in a brief summation, it really is, as I see it, the world of energy and the world of structure, these two different worlds, they meet within us. I think of a sailboat, I think of the sail as the structure, I think of the wind as the energy. Somewhere the wind meets the sail. Somewhere in our body, the energy meets the structure. Mm-hmm. And this meeting a place of energy and structure is not necessarily in the meridian system or not necessarily in the chakra system. It's deeper, it's more kind of in the fundamental underpinnings of the body as to how we're made up of these two aspects, particle and wave, energy and structure.
Mm-hmm.
So ZB is designed primarily to integrate energy with structure. And as this integration occurs, what happens, among other things, is that the physical structure improves. Range of motions improve, muscle tension, spasms lessen, and as this improvement occurs, then energy, especially in terms of acupuncture here, energy moves more freely through the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're dealing with, you know, chronic bursitis, something like that, and you can improve the physical structure, it makes the energy work of acupuncture seem to work better. It's a kind of hand in glove.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be when I first started doing ZB and acupuncture, I, for many years, did not mix the two. And I would work, with acupuncture with somebody for a number of sessions. And if I ever seemed to plateau, I would move over to zero balancing. I'd do a number of zero balancing sessions. And then I'd go back to the acupuncture and find that the acupuncture started working better again because the physical body was more open. So On the most physical level, that's the relationship of the two. Then, as we continue to explore this, and the interest in ZB is, as the structure goes, primarily in the bone and in the skeletal system, and it seems as though there is bone, there's held energy within the body.
Yes.
It could be in the bone, could be in soft tissue, could be anywhere. But this held energy, if it's held, tends to hold information. And so areas of tension, I view them as areas of vibration, which is held static. That this level of vibration is holding information, which leads one to understand that the mind is located throughout the body and not located in the brain. Particularly, I mean, there's a big mind, small mind, but the mind is not located just in the brain.
Yes.
So in doing body work and doing acupuncture too, you're doing any work where you're dealing with energy systems and you're dealing with held vibration, as you release the vibration back into the general field of the person, you also release content. And when I was in practice many years ago, before I even understood, had this understanding, my patients who I would see over numbers of months just start getting better in their psyche. Their life started going better. There was less tension. Divorces were easier. Deaths in the family were not as traumatic. Marriages weren't as hectic. And generally, they were more stable in the world of instability of different events. And this was such a common finding for me that I began to label zero balancing as a subliminal system of therapy.
Yes.
Because people were changing mentally as they were changing energy and structure-wise without ever processing, talking about, or literally dealing with the problems in the analytic or counseling way.
Right.
So it just led to realize that putting in these clearer, stronger fields in the body, which is what ZB does with the fulcrums, putting in stronger fields releases less well-held energy and allows the person to release part of their history, be it personal history, karmic history, ancestral history, whatever level it happened to be on, less well-held fields would tend to release, and so they start getting better. So I had a number of these ideas and influences, and while all of this was happening over a number of years, and I was developing the idea, I was also going to India and doing meditative retreats with Muktananda and later with Sai Baba, but Muktananda in those earlier days. And at one point, after I was with him for 4 or 5 years, I was doing a retreat with him up in Northern California and had the good fortune of having a major Shaktipat experience, which really altered my consciousness for the next 2 weeks in a very expanded, frightening way, in a way, really.
Yes.
But during that 2 week period, I remember I was in our hot tub, and I remember just the top of my head opened up and information poured in, and I really felt like my brain was being reorganized, and a lot of the information that I had, the structural knowledge from osteopathy, the energy knowledge from acupuncture, and the meditative experiences in India, all these levels began to coalesce into one unit, and I suddenly really understood how energy and structure works in the body.
Yes.
And that was the I won't say the beginning of zero balancing, but that was the liftoff of zero balancing into more of a full system and an inspired system through the Shaktipat Muktananda. It changed my life. And
right.
I thank him time and again for that experience. So ZB has come from the basic knowledge of Western and Eastern, and then it's been galvanized by Shakti, I think is the way to put it.
Okay, so I mean, that's fantastic. And I remember many years ago, I think, I'm sure this was 84 or 5, when I was in school and you were teaching, someone asked why you called it zero balancing. And you really, you sort of gave an off-the-cuff answer of, well, I just had to call it something.
We were looking for a name.
Yeah.
They were, in those days, there was Rolfing, there was Feldenkrais, there was Traeger work, and what I did not want was Fritzing.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't want that. So I'm looking for a name that described what we were doing, or I could call it something that had no other meaning. So it's a pure meaning for what we were doing. A client got up off the table, and she said, I feel so good, I feel so balanced, I feel like I've been zero balanced. And that was the beginning, that was the name. It was from her experience.
I see.
And over the years, since then, zero, of course, has become a very, very important number in the meditative world, in the
yes.
world, and I mean, has all, you can spin off of it in 101 ways. And we can spin off of it in zero balancing, too. You put a perfect fulcrum, they go to zero point, and all this stuff happens. But So whether we can spin off of it, that's not what the name, that's not where the name came from.
I understand, but that is interesting. The physically creating a fulcrum so that energy can flow. I mean, in my understanding, the fulcrum might be considered a physical metaphor for the center point of duality, which we...
it's not just a metaphor, it's a actuality.
Well, that's what I mean.
We can spin off it as a metaphor,
And that would be returning to zero.
Right.
And zero would also be perhaps the place you awaken to in the presence of Muktananda.
It could be.
Or Sai Baba.
Could be.
You know, the ground of being, the transcendence of the relative. There was some absolute dimension.
Yeah, zero.
That opened up.
Here and now, I mean, that's the, what all, that's the only thing there is.
Mm-hmm.
It really has all these other implications.
Mm-hmm. So I understand. So just let's make sure I'm on track here. It seems that in the beginning you thought of, and possibly still, think of zero balancing as a method that deals with latency and can unsublimate that which is latent.
That's an interesting way of putting it, and I'd say that's part of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing which has become apparent in doing ZBs is that through touch, through a fulcrum, we can easily take a person into expanded states of consciousness.
Right.
So right away it begins to affect their mindset, their, and takes them, you know, deep into... into a quiet mind more than they can get from meditation in years and years.
Right.
It just quiets the mind and takes them beyond their interpretation of themselves and takes them more towards their total potential.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's very interesting to me is that with zero balancing, with acupuncture, it's relatively easy when one gained a certain level of technique with it to induce deep states and higher state experiences in people.
Right.
And you mentioned, you know, in a way that zero balancing, I would say, put it in the language of releases latency, but gets what's sublimated to move, makes the implicit explicit, brings it up and out so it can be seen, dealt with, and perhaps even just let go of.
Right, I think it doesn't really need to be dealt with, Ron, because so much of this is so deep in the unconscious, subconscious, that never really, the content may never come to consciousness.
I see. So in other words, you see it as the energy of it moving, but not necessarily in a way that it has to be addressed by the cognitive faculty at all.
Exactly. Some are addressed, some are not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
But being addressed is not the criteria.
And I wonder about the relationship. You know, it's, again, it's relatively easy to induce a deeper and a higher experience in people. And we all know many, you had said that the experience with Muktananda changed your life. But we all know many people who've had profound spiritual experiences where when it faded 2 weeks later, that was the extent of it, and they just craved more experience. And I wonder, with, there's a fundamental mechanism that causes the kind of sublimation, the kind of not facing, the kind of encoding deep, deep, deep at the genetic level or the bone level, or in the blood or in the muscle, in the tissue, that which we won't face. And what is it, I mean, bringing it up is one thing, bringing it out's another. But do you have a consideration of whether or not zero balancing addresses, or acupuncture addresses, or how to address the fundamental mechanism itself? Because, of course, if we just release, 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 but the person is still not facing, then that mechanism's still in place, burying going forward.
I don't quite get what you mean, but the person is not spacing. I don't quite...
Well, if a person can have a spiritual experience, enjoy it, but not change in the face of it.
Uh-huh.
And a person can lay on a treatment table, and a ZB practitioner could create the perfect fulcrum, or an acupuncturist with some skill could put in the needles, and there can be a profound experience. But that and that can improve the pulses. The person may feel better for a while, but that hasn't necessarily changed the fundamental mechanism that created the condition that we released in the first place. That mechanism may be there continually recreating itself.
Yeah, it's a very good question. It certainly is one. There's no known, I don't know the answer to it. The fact that you got up off the table and your knee pain never came back.
Right.
Says something.
Right.
A person can have a deep experience which is life-changing,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't mean that they don't have any more problems or they don't have difficulties, but the direction of their life shifts.
Yes.
In a given moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't happen for everybody, and most time doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And these shifts, I think, occur slowly and gradually, and it's kind of one experience on top of another, and little by little, it begins to go deeper into consciousness. But every now and then,
mm-hmm.
one is fortunate enough, either through a needle or through touch or through one form or another, have an experience deep enough to shift their fundamental being.
Yes.
What makes that difference? Good question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned that you thought that a person could go very deep with zero balancing more than much time spent on meditation. And I'm just wondering what you think the difference is between a state of meditation and the state induced during zero balancing. Or
I have a very simplistic view of the world. I got a very simplistic view of the body,
uh-huh.
rather than more complicated.
Uh-huh.
And I could answer this in a very simplistic, metaphorically perhaps,
yeah,
but
that's
partially
fine.
True,
mm-hmm.
is that it quiets the left brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the person goes into a non-left brain experience. Now, where they go when they're out of the left brain, do they go to the right brain? Do they go, I don't know where they go. I call it into expanded consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But you can put a stimulus into the person in the left brain, is my understanding, is designed to function on a dot-dash system,
mm-hmm.
on a linear system. And if you can short-circuit that system, the person can't handle the left brain, and automatically the left brain stops.
Mm-hmm.
goes on tilt.
Mm-hmm.
At that particular moment, the left brain is quiet, and then they go somewhere else. And the purpose of meditation is to quiet the monkey mind. First meditation is to what's going on beneath the thinking mind, which is the left brain. And so much meditation is designed to quiet the mind. Well, you can quiet it through touch or through a needle because you give the body two signals which is unable to track, and the left brain will go quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically, something else will happen. I know you know the Jill Bolte story.
No. Oh, yes, yes, the on TED Talks.
Yeah, my stroke of insight person.
Yes.
Who had the left brain stroke, who functioned on her right brain for a period and was able to cognate that and write about it. And I thought that was a hugely important teaching to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think through touch, through needles, through experience, we can quiet the left brain, and then the person will have an experience beyond normal consciousness.
You know what struck me most watching her give that talk? What struck me most was what I would call the egoless passion that she had in discussing it. I mean, it wasn't just a talk, she was actually moved to tears.
Right.
As if she was right there.
She was reporting, but it was not, I did this or I did that. I mean, it was a very, that's a good observation.
Well, she was speaking from that place and was just moved by the sheer passion and beauty of it. And there was more there than just there was more there than just transcendence. She was actually, there was an urgency coming through where she so desperately wanted everyone in the audience who saw her to be able to see through those eyes and to be able to have that. And, you know, earlier when you were discussing zero balancing, and certainly my experience of it in the past is, as you say, I lie down and then it just seems in moments I'm transported to what I would I wouldn't describe it a meditative state, but I would describe it as a very deep yoga nidra kind of state. For me, the difference would be meditation to me is a non-dual state of absolute ease combined simultaneous with absolute attention. Whereas the yoga nidra-like state, the attention is really not there. It's like a very, very deep, it's a deep letting go of the mind. It has that dimension of meditation. But that's sort of like holding the body upright and not moving and paying absolute attention isn't there.
It's a meditative experience. I'm not sure it's spiritual. It could be spiritual for one person, not another. I know Joseph Campbell, as I recall, defined the, says there are two types of meditation. He said you can meditate from the, he's talking about chakras, either the seventh chakra or the sixth chakra. And if you meditate from the sixth chakra, which you do if you use a mantra or you watch a candle or you use some external object, that after you come back from meditation, you can really recall where you've been. You've been called part of the experience. And he said if you meditate from the seventh chakra, that you have no recall, you don't know where you were, you knew you know you were somewhere, but because time has passed, but you have no recall. He said the fundamental difference in his view, as I understood his view, was one has recall, one does not, and he did not equate one better than the other. He said there are two different types of meditation.
Right.
And these are two, how he was framing it.
Right. Where I was going with the question is that my experience of zero balancing, and it's usually my experience of acupuncture too, is of this profound state of relaxation beyond the mind. And but what I was seeing in the woman talking on TED Talks was also this other dimension, this passion, this urgency to have to go somewhere.
Right.
And I would, if we think of zero as being emptiness, the ground of being, the unborn, you know, the field that Lao Tzu, Buddha, or Rumi might have pointed to, there's an explosion coming out of that. Something is coming from nothing, right? Something's coming out of nothing. And that something is plus one, a creative impulse. Perhaps that impulse going up through the chakras, rising up through the spine, that vertical development. And when you were talking earlier, you were talking, you know, and zero balancing is about the zero, but I'm wondering what your experience is of that plus one dimension that Jill was portraying, that's the sort of urgency to have to move.
Well, she's talking, whatever her experience was, whether unity or duality experience, she's talking about her experience from the viewpoint of duality. She's talking about something, and as you say, not in a non-ego way, she's not bragging or anything, but she's sharing an experience which is a left brain or a duality type of experience, rather than being with Thich Nhat Hanh, who leads a meditation, and you drop into a unity position.
Right.
And it's a whole different experience.
That's right.
And yeah, I'm not sure you can be in both places at exactly the same time, or to report them both at exactly the same time.
That might be non-duality.
Yeah, I mean, going to unity. That when I get a ZB,
yes.
Well, I've got a problem, because usually I'm analyzing it the whole time, so to get a pure ZB for me is hard. But if I get a ZB from someone I know, and I'm not trying to, and I don't critique them, my experience is, Lonnie, you put your hands on me, and I'm gone.
Right.
I don't remember anything for the next half hour.
Right.
And they say, Fritz, you go to sleep. I don't go to sleep.
Right.
But the way that one is touched on bone, the way one is touched on a certain level,
yeah,
transcends the ability to track it. And to me, I just drop out. I can't remember any of the session until it's over, and I say, did I have a ZB?
Right.
And that experience, I think, can be very healthy.
Yes.
And especially if I have a problem, it gives me a few moments off the planet,
mm-hmm,
where my body and mind can adjust to its own inner nature, and I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
Plus, it's being done for me,
mm-hmm,
because the person constantly is putting me in a state of balance, and as that state has a certain power to it, which a state of imbalance doesn't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. I know that I remember something about that you were teaching a pyramid meditation.
Mm-hmm. Still do.
And can you talk a moment about that and how you see that integrated in any way with zero balancing and what the intention of it is? And
well, as we work with energy, and when I think of energy, I think of vibration. To me, energy and vibration are almost synonymous. Vibration is the closest word I come to when I think of energy. So how can we work with energy out of the body? Well, mm-hmm, you can create a pyramid which enhances the space. It organizes and intensifies. That's what I'm looking for. It amplifies, intensifies the vibration because you're putting a container around something which is then holding itself, and it becomes more empowered. So you are creating an empowered space through imagery or through visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And we found in the pyramid meditation a number of things. One, you do this in front of each morning in a class, and people learn faster. Second, you can put qualities in this empowered space in the pyramid which really help the person learn. And one of the suggestions we put in, I've been putting in the last couple of years, which I find really helps, is to say that confusion is allowed to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody in the learning state is going to go through states of confusion. And the thing not to do is to go down the rabbit hole of comparing yourself to others or self-judgment or ignored, disempowering yourself because you're confused. The thing to do is to realize that confusion held with equanimity of the mind leads to insight. So as you get into confusion, the guidance is just to stay with the confusion and suddenly something else will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so and the other thing, the pyramid, is holding other people in the highest personal regard, which is a key piece of ZB, not hands-on. But the teaching is to hold people in the highest regard, so much so that you put your hands on someone, you automatically are holding them in high regard.
Mm-hmm.
It means without judgment, without comparing, and so they automatically are in a more neutral position than they are when one is mindfully analyzing or criticizing.
Right.
But the other way we use the vibration is in the parallel breath meditation, which we teach every workshop. So you use the breath, you use the energy of the breath to influence your future. Use the energy of your breath to influence your present and to influence your future. So what we do is to teach ways of working with energy, both hands-on through fulcrums, hands-off through the pyramid and through the parallel breath, to enhance your life and to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to use energy both on the body and off the body makes living life much more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always been fascinated because I only took three or four days with you back in the 80s, but every now and then when a person has a joint problem, I'll just put the joint very gently in the end range of motion, and very often the person comes back and has real improvement with it. And I just think at a technical level, I mean, you know, it's
it'd be great to have you take a couple more classes.
Yeah.
You have enough on your plate, but
yes,
it isn't the position of the end range
right
which is as important as holding it in stillness in a balanced position so the person can then reorient around stillness.
Yes.
And what makes a fulcrum powerful is not its strength or is not its location, but it's its pause. It's holding it stationary while a person can change around it. And that's the critical piece of healing, is holding them in a place where change is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so a fulcrum does that, and whether the joint is in right in the early end range or whether it's the mid range, beneath that is another principle of holding them in a balanced position wherever they happen to be in, and hold that balance stationary, and they will reorient around it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was going. I asked a few of your students who are also my students, who are people who've been practitioners for a while, if they had any questions for you. And one person, Rabab, wanted to know. You know Rabab?
Yeah, sure,
yes,
sure.
Yes. Well, Rabab and I are very close. And she had asked if you've had any glimpse of a possibility for the physical body to heal as fast as consciousness can heal.
Say it again.
If you've had any glimpse that the physical body can heal as quickly as consciousness is able to heal. And I was going to ask the question, but I thought, well, my experience was a direct proof of that, because my awareness of my knee being in so much pain changed, and there was also no more physical problem there. There was no impediment in terms of range of motion instantly. The mind and the body healed in the same moment.
And there was no simple answer. It seems to me that as a general statement, the physical body is denser than the emotional body, which is denser than the spiritual body. And so the density tends to slow healing or slow change just because it's slower.
Mm-hmm.
But any place in the physical body, say your knee, you not only have your structure, but balanced with that, you also have your consciousness and your energy body. It's all in the same place at the same time. And if you put a good fulcrum in and have good fortune, the change may not necessarily be just on the physical level. I mean, it's not just on the physical level.
Right.
So on the vibratory level, or the consciousness level, which in your case may have been the dominant problem in the pain. So when the fulcrum was put in and the pain left and function improved, it was really the energy conscious body which had shifted, and the physical body shifted also, but the healing was more on the other level.
Okay, great. Well, I have a few other big questions for you. So you've been in healing, and you're very thoughtful, and you've been in healing, and you have a lot of clinical experience and teaching experience. Have you come to any fundamental insight on what it is that heals?
Well, it's a good question, and it depends on who you're talking to and what one's frame of reference is. I don't have an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that when a person is held stationary, they have a chance of changing. And that changing, if it changes direction, it has a healing quality to it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, it's my experience that when any of us are in a negative relationship to something, which we could call minus one, some kind of imprisoned or egoic relationship.
Right.
It's most often necessary to go to zero before we can come to plus one. And that would seem to relate in somehow to the basics of how it sounds like zero balancing is working. It taking a person just beyond themselves, having a transcendent experience, then, you know, the main thing we seem to be in negative relationship to is our own minds. So anything that brings us to that, to a zero place of no relationship to that for a while, is going to allow a self-organization according to some other principle.
Yeah, if there are several people, many people, but two people come to my mind, who believe that we live in a universe which blinks on and off.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, this Chopra's has this, Bentoff has this, and several other people. Bentoff, to me, was extremely influential in his book, Stalking the Wild Pendulum, if you never read it. But the essence is that if you think of a pendulum and it's swinging, when it gets down to its lowest point, it's at maximum velocity, and then as it goes back up the arc, it comes to a point where the velocity goes to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back down the opposite direction. Mathematically, if you multiply anything by zero, you get zero.
Mm-hmm.
So there comes a point in this model that as something comes up and it goes to a stop, that for a moment it goes out of existence. It goes to infinity, it goes to zero.
Yes.
And then it comes back into form, it goes back the other way. And I'd often wondered, and I still do, how can a person get gray hair? How can the color of the hair change? What happens allows it from going from one color to another? And when I start thinking of the Bentoff model or the Chopra model, which I agree with, that we go for microseconds into nothing or into infinity, during that off period, we can change because there's nothing holding us in a form, and then we come back, things have changed. So healing has to do with taking a person beyond their normal state of consciousness into a place of void.
Yes.
And now, in void, they can get better or worse. There's no law that says they have to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think nature tends us to get better, but not necessarily. But I think that mechanism is one that has helped me a lot to understand what healing is and what we're doing. And it's really a matter of a theory. I mean, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But it makes the left brain a little happier to have a theory that seems to cover the base.
And the way you're talking about it, it strikes me, I mean, the dimension that you're emphasizing is beyond the mind. And I'd ask you, what do you think the role of will is? You know, conscious choices, unconscious choices, the role of will.
Well, we certainly have, I think, freedom of choice. I think we do. But when you're in the healing world, I mean, will is not really an issue for me. The healing world is that the practitioner has a quiet mind.
Mm.
That the practitioner, on one level, is not there, so the practitioner's viewpoint doesn't determine the outcome for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person doing a session ideally works a split-level consciousness. The fingers are doing one thing, holding the person in a point of balance, where the mind is just observing but not interacting. And if this can, this to me is the perfect state of healing.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts the receiver at a point of their balance, of their unknown, with no influence from the practitioner.
Right. And
I'm not trying to say I want to get better, hope your pain goes away, this or that. My mind is as quiet as I can make it.
Yes.
And my fingers are doing the work, not my mind.
Right. But what about the role of the will of the patient?
Well, they can overpower me. How would the will be? Can you will yourself to be better? Can you will yourself to have good health? I'm not sure.
Well, you can make a choice. What I'm pointing toward more, and actually I'm asking more from the standpoint of in relationship to a profound experience. Once we've had a profound experience, as you had a profound experience with Muktananda, or as you know, we have profound experiences on the treatment table, or a patient may have a profound experience. The experience may change a person fundamentally, but then it also seems to me to be important that the person has found meaning in that experience.
That the person does what?
That they found a meaning or an implication, something in the experience that they would then strive to make their life more a living representation of whatever had moved them in it. So for instance, just to give an example with Dr. Bolte, if she just describes this beautiful experience she's had the rest of her life and talks about it, then it will remain something in the past that was deeply moving that she can recount. But it would take will, and it would take some striving to make her life a living reflection of that, so it wasn't just the past experience, but that she actually became that presence in the world. So I'm just interested in that. And
sure, of course, Jo Bolte had her previous education.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows the brain, she knows the mind, that's her field.
Right.
I would not describe her feeling, her experience as an ecstatic, wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wonderful she survived it.
Right.
But I don't think she's going to claim that this was a wonderful, wonderful because it changed her life.
Right.
But it wasn't a beautiful experience.
No, of course not.
But people who have a near-death experience
mm-hmm.
often come back changed. Their attitude has changed, their belief has changed.
Yes.
And usually it's changed more towards a benevolent nature than a malevolent.
Right, more humility.
Say it again.
More humility.
Yeah. So, you keep me reading about Indian men in the Hindu tradition who have been going through life changes in Shakti. I can't tell you right now who comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
But their life is just one problem after another, one illness after another, one stress after another. And it's not an easy journey at all. And whether it's just their own personal history, which is so complicated, it keeps coming to the surface, or whether it's karmic history and past lives you're dealing with, but having an opening ecstatic experience can be very, very painful, can be very difficult, can lead to other more difficult experiences. And they still think they're on the right track,
right.
But it's not an easy journey.
Right. Right. I guess that's why it's called the hero's journey.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, Fritz, I have two more questions.
Sure.
I guess I'd like, well, I'm going to ask them at the same time. What do you think the future of medicine is? And combined with that really would be, what would you like to see it be? And then I'm really interested I know you're a person who in a sense doesn't rest and keeps innovating, and I just think it would be great to finish with whatever your cutting edge is in developing this work, what you're pushing into, the new steps that you're intuiting.
How do I see medicine? I mean, in Western medicine is an exquisite system. And it has, and it needs to continue in its exquisiteness. all the work they're doing with the heart and the lungs and the major surgeries and all this technical stuff is really amazing. And it's saving many lives and it's helping many people.
Yes.
But medicine should not be in charge of health. They should be in charge of illness and not in charge of health. So I think the ideal world is that other healers and other people in the healing game can express themselves without getting caught up so much in the political problems, the people who are saying, this is my territory, you can't come in here, this is my territory, not allowed to come here, people that are really defining what they think they have control over, so it limits other people. I think that we need to have an easier system of people practicing non-traditional areas. And the bottom line, I think, is summarized to me by the Dalai Lama's statement that world peace is brought about by individual change.
Mm-hmm.
And that the hope of the world is in individual change or mass conditioning change, but it's changing the individual. And so the future of healing hopefully lies in people becoming internally harmonic and internally peaceful, so they don't have a need to project war or anger or other things needlessly on other people.
Mm-hmm. And can you see
going towards internal
yeah.
peace, and hopefully the New Age systems, other healers can move in that direction, and and be more free to do that and explore that, while medicine itself is getting more technical, which is all fine and good, and becoming more expert in dealing with illness, but they're really not dealing with health.
Yes. Fantastic. And that would leave us with what is your cutting edge? What is fascinating you, and what do you see the next steps being?
I think I'm really fascinated with my personal next edge, not for all the healing work,
right.
is the function of bone in the body, because I think the bone is the condition which is the most rapidly conducting vibration throughout the system. I think it's the fastest way of balancing a person, to balance them on the level of the skeleton, literally on the bone. And as the bone vibration begins to become stable, it affects all vibration above it and which it supports. And so I'm fascinated with why dealing with bone seems to be so powerful, and how can we define it more clearly, how can we understand it more clearly so we're able to use it more powerfully.
Yes.
So I'm fascinated with touch, I'm fascinated with the bone, and I'm fascinated with expanded consciousness, which is where health resides.
Fantastic, Fritz. Is there anything else you'd like to conclude with?
No, I mean, it's been an interesting conversation, Lonnie, and talking with you. You're so knowledgeable, and you have so much experience that it's just been fun hanging out.
Yeah.
I hope it's meaningful. It's been meaningful for me. I hope it has been for you.
Definitely. I think it's been a beautiful conversation, Fritz. And I just want to take a moment and let the audience who will be listening, because this will be on the web maybe forever, that they can see Fritz's work at zerobalancing.com in case they're interested in either connecting with a Zero Balancer to receive sessions or to study.
Right. We need more people. We need people on both levels. But, So you're going to edit this?
Yeah, I'm going to edit the extraneous talk at the beginning and the end, like what we're saying right now. And any, you know, I'll just edit it down to make it a little more concise. But, I mean, really the bulk of what, most of what we said is going to be in there, except for the introduction at the beginning when you and I were just saying hello to each other and this ending piece here.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope it's helpful. I hope it does the work, and hope it makes a difference.
Yeah, I think people will love it, Fritz. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I always remember being impressed when I studied with you at the at your openness and your just never resting and always looking deeper and deeper and deeper. And I know what an inspiration you've been to so many of my own students.
Yeah, we have a lot of people in common, Lonnie. You've been a real teacher and inspiration for them. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, thank you very much, Fritz. Lots of love. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.